All right, so welcome, ladies and gentlemen. My name is DJ Fazmoa. This is Prescription Radio on Kuri Radio 93.7 FM. Today in studio, we have two lovely guests who are part of something very different in the terms of Caribbean events and stuff in Sydney. It's usually food, it's usually music, it may even be cricket, but this is what? A symposium, apparently. Callaloo and Wattle Seed. So we have two guests in studio. The first guest goes by the name of...
Sienna Brown.
And the second guest goes by the name of?
Ben Etherington.
Excellent. So let's get some background on both of you. We'll start with Sienna. And I guess the first question I really, really want to know is, who are you? Where are you from? What's your background? And why this?
Why this? Well, I think Ben and I have been scratching our heads around that one for a while. But no, seriously, I've been here for many years. I'm Jamaican born in Kingston, Jamaica, and then grew up in Toronto, Canada. And then now I've migrated and I live in Australia. And Ben and I have actually been working together for a number of years now. We started way back in, when was it, Ben?
2018, 2019.
Yeah. So we've managed to hone our skills. And out of all of that Caribbean-Australian teamwork, we've come to realize that a lot of Caribbean people kind of are isolated. And one of the things we were hoping to do with this symposium was to be able to bring people together.
Excellent. Ben, take it away.
So, yeah, my name's Ben Etherington. I am a lecturer at Western Sydney University, and I've been involved in sort of Caribbean culture as a massive enthusiast, but then over the last 10 years, also increasingly something I've looked to in my academic research. A lot of that was fired up by going to the Caribbean in 2012 to look at some old newspapers that had Creole medium poetry. So in Jamaica, I guess that would be Jamaican patois. In Guyana, that would be Creolese. And I've just kind of gone down the rabbit hole. I don't have a Caribbean background myself, but I've made a lot of friends like Sienna, who are from the region, whether in the United Kingdom or Australia. And yeah, Sienna, it's been a beautiful friendship. We first met in 2015. And over the years, we've just forged a collaboration about reviving, rescuing, pulling stories about the history of Caribbean people in Australia out of dusty tomes and archives. And what we're doing together right now is trying to bring Caribbean people who are in Australia, whether they've been born in Australia or they've migrated to the country, together to talk about the contributions of Caribbean people now and over time.
What it actually means to be a Caribbean person in the context of living in Australia. Because I think part of the dilemma that we all deal with is that we're sort of a minority group, you know, and we're scattered throughout. Everywhere you go, you'll probably find a Caribbean person. But they're usually in twos or threes. They're not in a huge community. Well, there is a huge community. And as you said at the beginning of the program, people get together for events, they get together for food, they get together for music, and of course, cricket. Cricket, my favorite, but we don't actually really come together and talk about what it means, I think, to be a Caribbean person.
Can you guys give an overview, like a generic overview of Callaloo and Wattle Seed and what some of the attractions are of the event? Anybody?
Oh, I was going to turn it over to you, Ben. Well, first of all, it's a one-day symposium, and what we've done is we've somehow managed to pull together the top Caribbean Australian creatives, not only in Sydney but also from Melbourne. And we'll be kind of looking at different, we've brought together different people to sit on different panels. And these panels will actually talk about very different things. So we've got a writing panel, we've got a music panel, we've got a performance panel, and we've got an educational panel. And Ben will be able to sort of go into more detail about who these people actually are that we've brought in.
It's an event that's going to be in Parramatta on May 3rd, and the day is headlined by the Afro-Caribbean writer Maxine Beneba-Clark. She's produced a body of work now that's been exploring what it means to be black in Australia, and more specifically what it means to be from a West Indian background in Australia. So Maxine's going to give a kind of framing talk about her experience. She just had an amazing production of an adaptation of her memoir, The Hate Race, performed by Zara Newman, who's also going to be at the symposium at the Malvern Theatre in Melbourne. And then following that, we're going to have a range of writers, including our brilliant Sienna Brown here, talking about making a home for themselves through their writing in Australia. So Kath Moore, who comes from an Afro-Guyanese background but was born in Australia. Consuelo Martinez, who's Puerto Rican and a lecturer at Macquarie University. And that's going to be chaired by Karen Ray Adams, who's a Barbadian academic and writer. Just communicating with her the other day, she's starting to publish some stories and getting into that part of things as well. So as you can see, we're sort of bringing people from different parts of the region, but also a combination of migrants like Consuelo and Sienna and those born in Australia like Kath Moore. I can keep talking about some of the other people involved.
That was writing. Let's give them the music. Let's give them the performance and educational pieces as well, like who's speaking in those things.
So we've had some wonderful help from people in the music community. We're from the literature world. We asked the ABC, former ABC presenter Brent Clough, to help us out. Brent was originally going to be involved, but sadly has had to withdraw. So we've got Amma Owusu, who is of both Ghanaian and Jamaican background. She's going to be facilitating a panel that's kind of a multi-generational take on Caribbean music in Australia. So we have JJ Roberts, who brought sound system culture to Australia way back in 1973. Remarkably, that's the same year that sound systems from Jamaica turned up in New York, precipitating the hip hop movement. So JJ Roberts was doing that all the way back in the 1970s. We've got Denny Gonzalez, who's from Trinidad and Tobago. He arrived about a decade later, first as a jazz musician, but he also saw an opportunity to forge some steel pan culture in Australia. And he'd done a lot of educational work, a lot of bringing people together, community together, to teach steel pan music and to tour around the country. And there were actually a lot of pan artists that arrived in Australia. So he's going to be speaking to those experiences. And then we've got Atisha, who's a more recent migrant from Montreal in Canada, but her family's from Haiti. And Atisha has set up Haitian cultural events, particularly centered around music, because she sings Haitian Creole songs. She also sings jazz. She's been a presenter on ABC Radio. So that's going to be a kind of layered look at the different generations of musical contributions to Australia from the Caribbean. But at all points, we're also thinking about creolization. Isn't that right, Sienna? We're thinking about the ways in which Caribbean culture is mixing, encountering, fusing with elements of vernacular culture here in Australia.
Right. So what's very exciting for us is that, and it kind of, as you said, Ben, pulls it all together. In terms of our performance platform, we've got Zara Newman, who was in Melbourne performing The Hate Race, which is Maxine's amazing play. It was a one-woman show. She did all 16, 20 parts. And she's going to bring a certain amount of energy. In fact, I think she's going to be at Sydney Theatre Company in the next couple of months. She's going to be playing vampire. It's a vampire play. And there again, it's a one-woman show, and she's going to be doing... She actually did the Billie Holiday one-woman show, and that had rave reviews. So, you know, she's going to bring to the panel not only being able to talk about her Caribbean background, but Caribbean from the point of view of performance. We've matched her up with the amazing Nancy Dennis, who is in fact from Haiti. And Nancy was just recently in a production at Hayes Theatre, a vampire production, and I went to have a look, and she was really a star, a standout performer in that. So, and I'm chairing that, I believe. So together, because I've got a performance background, I used to be a professional dancer, we're going to talk about all things performance during that panel.
Exciting.
Yes, very exciting. And then Ben's going to be the chair for the educational panel. So I might turn that over to him so he can talk about it. And we've suddenly got a new addition, haven't we, Ben, to that?
Yeah, it's really exciting, the group that we're pulling together to talk about not just education like teaching, but the culture of education, how you bring cultural education, knowledge, cultural knowledge into different spaces of learning. So I guess at the head of this panel is a woman called Anne Hickling Hudson. So she's a Jamaican, but she actually spent time in Grenada in the late 70s, early 80s during the Grenadian Revolution. So she was there under Maurice Bishop, forging some of the educational programs. Of course, those who are familiar with the history of Grenada know that that did not end well for the revolutionary government. Later in the 80s, Anne migrated to Australia, and she was a pioneer both in the classroom, in teaching Caribbean-specific ways of knowing, and also setting up the Australian Association for Caribbean Studies with a number of other colleagues. And she's been a great driver of the culture and the energy around Caribbean studies across the whole country. Mm. So it's a tribute to Anne, who's, I think she's now, you know, in her late 70s, 80s, to still have the energy to come and contribute. And alongside Anne will be an Australian-born person from a West Indian background. Very excited to say that Councillor Imelda Davis, who's the first black councillor on the City of Sydney Council, and whose dad comes from Grenada, is going to be sitting on that panel. And she brings a very different perspective because her father, Clayton Davis, who was an amazing musician, and was one of the first calypsonians, you know, performing in Australia at RSL clubs and things like that. Her father is somebody she knew growing up, but she actually was raised in a South Sea Islander community in the Northern Rivers. And Imelda has been a huge community activist. I'm sure she's been on Koori Radio many times to talk about her work. So Imelda's going to be talking about what it means to bring, I guess, a diverse blackness into educational spaces, because she's got South Sea Islander background. She interacted and was part of Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander communities in her area and in Sydney when she moved here, and also has always been connected to that West Indian side of her identity. And then finally on that panel, we have Caro Murray, who's an Afro-Cuban woman, and she's a more recent migrant. So we've always got this layering of people born here, people from different decades. Caro moved here in the late 2010s from Spain. She's from a Cuban background, so she's bringing more of that Hispanophone Caribbean element into our discussion. And Caro has found herself at the Australian National University, where she teaches global Black diasporic studies, and particularly she's going to talk about what it means to teach the history of the transatlantic slave trade in the context of Australia, which is very different from teaching it in Europe, teaching it in the Caribbean. So it's going to be a day, I think, where a lot of these different vectors of experiences come together, and it's going to be exciting to see what people make of it, how they bring their experiences together and reflect on them.
What kind of promotions or promotional plan did you guys have for this?
I think part of the project of bringing people together is to talk about how to set up those networks, how to communicate across different kinds of Caribbean identity and different layers of experience in Australia. So this is happening in a university context, but it's very much about engagement with the community. So the Writing and Society Research Centre at Western Sydney University is generously funding a lot of this conference. We've also got an Australian Research Council grant. And at the same time that we're putting on this symposium, Sienna and I are putting a podcast series together with University of Technology Sydney's Impact Studios about the history of Caribbean people in Australia. So really the whole process of bringing it together, talking to people, communicating with different parts of the Caribbean Australian cultural world has led us into the kinds of spaces like your show, Faz, where we can start to make those connections to the community. We, of course, have a website, We've got a Facebook events page. You can find us at Callaloo and Wattleseed on the Western Sydney University website. We're trying to get out on radio. There's Instagram, all the usual ways of trying to build momentum. But this isn't about getting a big crowd. It's not like those wonderful reggae carnival market days you get in Marrickville, where it's how many bums on seats is how successful it is. Really, we want to have a high quality discussion. We want people specifically from the Caribbean community. Of course, all people are welcome. And from communities that Caribbean people have interacted with, most notably Indigenous communities here in Sydney and across the country, to come and think about what are my experiences, how have I come into this country and navigated it? Because as Sienna said at the top, a lot of the participants have said, look, I've felt like I've kind of been making my way on my own. At times I've connected with different groups, at times I've had these good network, but they can tend to fall away. And you sort of see this over history as we put this podcast series together. I don't know if you agree with this, Sienna. You sort of see people who rise up, like the boxer Peter Jackson, who was the biggest sports star in Australia and probably the world in 1890, came from St. Croix, developed his career here in Sydney. He was a huge figure. He knew all these West Indians and had a whole community around him in Sydney in the 1880s. But that kind of fell away. It's not part of anybody's cultural history that they continually return to. So I guess, yeah, this symposium wants to do something in that space to bring people together.
That's exactly right, Ben. I think you've hit the nail on the head. And it's this sort of spreading out, because even during the process of talking to people, even though they've said, well, hey, we're sort of isolated, they've started to speak to people about it. They've started to put out little tendrils out into the community. And I think it's important for people to know that on the day, we've actually set aside at the end of the day that there'll be an actual panel or an open discussion that anybody that's in the audience can actually come and speak to us or speak to the panel. There'll be a Q&A at the end of each panel. So it's not that we're just going to have people sitting there listening to people talking. We're really hoping there's going to be an interactive process throughout that. And then at the end of the symposium, we're off to the bar where we will be speaking to everybody. And hopefully there'll be a bit of networking and people actually thinking about, well, what can we do next? I think that's what we're hoping is really going to come out of this, not just this isolated event, but that we are going to sort of see a birthing, if you like, a seeding that's going to send us somewhere. And we're just not sure where yet.
What inspired the name Callaloo and Wattleseed?
So this one's got a bit of a history to it. Okay. There was a wonderful volume put together by people out of Caribvic, the Caribbean Association in Victoria, headed by a researcher called Karina Smith, called Adding Pimento. And it was all about migrant from the Caribbean coming to Australia from, say, the 1960s all the way up to the time that volume was published in 2013-14. So we like this idea of the metaphor of food, adding pimento, adding a typically Caribbean spice to the mix of Australian culture and Australian society. But we wanted to think more about the convergence of Caribbean and Australian culture, which of course in the Caribbean context is talked about like creolization. So we wanted to take something typical, one of the famous, beautiful, tasty ingredients from the Caribbean region, which can be found in just about every island, Callaloo, and think about, well, what happens when it mixes with a native ingredient like the wattleseed. So Callaloo and wattleseed, I don't know if anyone's ever put those two things together, and we're kind of asking that question, what happens when you put these elements together? Is it, I don't know how far I should take this metaphor, a tasty combination or something that has a bit of sort of tension and conflict and contradictions involved?
And for those of you out there who don't know what Callaloo is, because I've actually been asked that question, it's like a spinach. It's green. It's one of my favorite foods, actually. And it's cut up and, you know, mix it in with a little bit of onions and peppers. And it's just a beautiful thing that you eat with saltfish and ackee. And of course, wattleseed is a healing seed as well that gets crushed up and used by Indigenous people. So it felt like it was kind of at the root, at the base, the two of them together, and the colours, the beautiful, beautiful green of the Callaloo and the beautiful yellow of the wattleseed blossoms. We felt that was a really appropriate.
So the event showcases a blend of cultures. Can you tell us more about the cultural elements being celebrated?
I mean, when you're talking about culture, I suppose, are you talking about where places where people come from? And so therefore, if you've got the mixture of Haitian, Jamaican, Cuba, you know, all of these people come from all of these different islands, and they're going to be bringing their own cultural approach to the questions that we're going to be asking. But also, I think in terms of the flavor of their personalities will be different and will be mingled together on the day.
How does Kalalu and Wattle Seed contribute to the understanding and appreciation of Caribbean culture in Sydney?
I don't think we can speak for what it's going to achieve, but we really hope that the Caribbean community across the city can find out about this event, can come together and have a discussion about what it means to be Caribbean, which really means people telling their stories. It's about a day of people sharing their stories and then reflecting on the differences. The Caribbean, if you're not familiar with the region, you may not know that it is an absolutely amazing, I don't even know what the metaphor you would use. It's just an incredible diversity of different cultures that are so specific to different islands and even some of the mainland parts of the Americas. So rocking up in Jamaica, even compared to other parts of the West Indies, is so different to Suriname or to the Dutch West Indies, the French West Indies, to Cuba. So it can sometimes be the case that Caribbean people find out more about each other's cultures when they get away from the Caribbean. And in Australia, it's sort of interesting. Yeah, how does a Cuban-Caribbean experience like that of Caro Murray, who's on one of our panels, compare to the Haitian experience? We have Nancy Dennis, who was born in Australia of Haitian parents, who's reflected on her Haitian experience through her one-woman show, Mat Boule. And then Atisia, who's an artist who sings Haitian Creole songs at Haitian events that she's created. What are those kind of interactions going to produce? And the contribution, hopefully, will be to make those discussions even possible, because to our knowledge, this hasn't really been done before, where people from different kinds of cultural backgrounds from the Caribbean, but also different artistic practices, are all thinking comparatively about how they come at this. So it's sort of a bit academic, but it's also about sharing stories.
I was going to say, really, it's about truth-telling, isn't it? I mean, I love that word. It's really about speaking your truth. And so when it comes down to it, at the end of the day, it will just be hearing what people really feel, heartfelt, we're hoping, about what all of this really means to them, I think. And, you know, they'll be speaking from their heart. And I'm hoping, too, that I think we're hoping that there will be in this discussion that it won't just be a talk fest. There'll be music. There'll be a little bit of music in terms of the panel, the music panel. In the performance, for instance, we're going to have some poems read. So there's going to be a bit of interactivity on the day, and one where you will actually get to experience the culture firsthand. And I'd like to say that for a lot of people, they don't actually know where the Caribbean is. And for those people who don't know where the Caribbean is, it's actually right beside, in the Gulf of Mexico, between North America and South America. And yes, it's way over the other side.
Right.
It's 10,000 miles from here.
So some questions around organization. This symposium has a lot of people. You mentioned your funding, you mentioned your backgrounds in university works. And so I'm just curious, and I'm pretty sure some of the listeners will be curious as to how much planning and organization went into this. What does that look like for both of you? Who reaches out to who? How do you guys source these people?
I might start on this one because I want to pay tribute to Sienna Brown here. When I got the funding with Sienna's help, that is making this possible and making this podcast series we're working on possible, I sort of had in mind something that academics often do, which is you invite a whole lot of specialists, they give papers, and then they go on and they publish those papers. And generally that happens in a way that's removed from society. You know, people talk about the ivory tower and so on. And Sienna thankfully said, no, we're not going to do that. We're not going to have a bunch of specialists talking to each other. We want to have something that's going to engage with the community. And Deanna's has lived here for over 30 years now. And she's had that same experience of sort of disorientation, but then finding other people to connect with over the years. And it's been kind of extraordinary to see the depths of the relationships that she has with people like Imelda Davis, who's got a Grenadian background, and other people who are involved on the day. And it's really kind of like tentacles spreading out from those initial connections that she had. And I had a few connections through my work and research as well. And it's sort of like that. It's not so much a network with nodes and things connecting. It's like an organic kind of, you know, person to person kind of tendril connecting each other. I don't know. How would you put it? And we're sort of, yeah.
I think that's exactly right, Ben. I think you've hit the nail on the head. It's an octopus. It's like an octopus. Tendrils going out and, you know, you run in. In fact, Imelda came because I went to a party to that was celebrating Jaslyn Hall, who used to be on ABC Radio. I think everyone who might know remember who Jaslyn Hall was from the Barbettas. So we went to a party to celebrate her being in Sydney, and there was Imelda. And I think it's always been a bit like that, hasn't it? That I go to a performance, I see somebody, I think they'd be great, and then we engage. And in terms of the planning of it, well, I think in a way, because Ben and I have been working together for so long, we've kind of got this team thing going. And I think in a way, on a psychic level, it generates stuff. You know, when you've got energy going out, it doubles itself. And so in terms of planning, I would say this has been a year in the planning, 18 months almost. You know, none of this happens overnight. I think there's this feeling like if you just do a few social media things and make a lot of noise, that's what makes things happen. I think what we've been doing is actually bedding down psychic energy into this land. And that's what we've really been doing. And I think out of that we'll seed these ideas, seed these protections, if you like, for this culture. Because let's face it, we're in competition with all these other migrant cultures, without getting too political about it, and fair enough. But I do think that for us to sort of protect our culture, in a way, we need something like this. We need to be reminded how special it is, and how much, in fact, these podcasts also that we're doing will explain to people that we've been here since 1788. So, and, you know, we've been here for just as long as everybody else. And we deserve that recognition, I think, without trumpeting our trumpets too much. I think it's really important to recognize that.
Yeah, as long as other migrant to Australia, not Indigenous people, of course. But that's another theme, I think, that because West Indian were on the first fleet and have been arriving in the country for 240 years since the initiation of the colonisation of Australia, there's been all kinds of relationships forged across many communities. And a massive focus for us on the day will be thinking in each panel about that relationship to Indigenous Australia. Koori FM radio listeners may know the Aboriginal writer Tony Birch. We invited Tony to come along to the symposium for a couple of reasons, the most significant of which is that he has a Barbadian ancestor, a man called Prince Moody, who arrived in the middle of the 19th century. And among Prince Moody's descendants was Uncle Les. This is Tony Birch's uncle, who was the bantamweight champion of Australia, alongside Peter Jackson, this great St. Croix boxer who emerged through Sydney. It kind of points to a big legacy, a big cultural legacy in sport. And we had a long conversation with Tony a few weeks ago, in which he talked about the kind of mongrel way in which people from different kinds of blackness were mingling together in the inner city of Melbourne, particularly in the Fitzroy area, from really the end of the 19th century all the way up to the time that he was growing up in that area in the 1950s and 60s. So it's really a massive opportunity to think about kind of, yeah, as Sienna said before, a cultural connection that's not always had massive visibility, but is kind of hidden in plain sight. You know, it's a history that's unfolded in front of us. Yeah, it's a funny thing, actually, because it's coming out of a university context.
Yeah.
a lot of the organising has been about breaking outside of the way you usually do things in universities. You get you apply for money, you have money that can maybe pay for some speakers and things, and in the way the universities work, you're sort of meant to just turn cash into a different kind of capital, and that capital is kind of academic capital, publishing papers, publishing volumes, and that kind of thing. It's certainly true that universities now prioritize what they call engagement and impact, but this is actually something entirely different. This is driven by the fact that Sienna and I have been working together for a long time, and we're just driven by curiosity. We were curious to know who's out there and how do we make connections and how do we bring people together. So the money side of things is coming from kind of academic research, but the organizing has just been organic. It's been us having conversations, reaching out to people that we know, reaching out to people that they know, saying, we've got an event coming up. What do you want to get from that event? So there's not been really a plan or a structure. It's kind of evolved through a relationship that we have and also all the relationships that we are forming along the way.
But I mean, I guess on a practical level, because as you know, events are driven by, yeah, there is planning and scheduling and 50 million emails, which we all do. And there's also a sense of actually, because even though, yes, there's funding, the funding is pretty slim, I have to admit. It's we're on salary through this grant, a minuscule amount of money. So really what you're seeing or out of this 18 months is our passion. It's a freebie in a sense. We're not actually being paid for the amount of hours that we've put into that. But I think all events are like that. Everybody that works, what you do, I'm sure you put in a lot more time than what you're actually paid for. It's all about... So a lot of it's been volunteer in the sense of, as Ben said, it's curiosity driving it. And we're discovering things. And I think for me in particular, what's happened is that I'm starting to get a sense of belonging, that I actually belong in this country. Whereas for many, many years that I lived there, I didn't feel I belonged. And maybe there are other Caribbean people out there that this process might help them, this symposium might actually help them to get that sense that, hey, wait a minute, we're not on the outside looking in, we're on the inside looking out. And we've actually contributed in a very specific heartfelt way, and we do belong and we deserve to be heard.
What are the future goals for Kalaloo and Wattle Seed, and how do you envision the growth, if there is any growth?
Well, I think there's going to be written material coming out of that, and I'll let Ben talk about that. From my perspective, what I'm hoping to come out of it, I'm in the middle of writing a play, so that I'm hoping that I will be actually be able to engage with some of our performers, some of the musicians, some of the writers, and we might even be able to do a production out of it. That's something that's sort of been bubbling away in the back of my mind that I'm sort of quite excited about, that I haven't told Ben yet. But that could be an end result. But I think there'll also be a journal coming out of this, I think, Ben?
Yeah, we'd love to see people's contributions on the day turn into something that other people have access to. So one form could be publication, maybe putting a book together or publishing it with a journal, whether in Australia or overseas, because it'd be great to get... international attention, because there's a lot of focus on Caribbean culture across the world, but not in Australia. But also audio. So Sienna and I have made audio together. We did a documentary, radio documentary for the ABC about Caribbean convicts in Australia. And now we're doing this podcast series with UTS. And we're going to integrate the audio from the discussions on the day into that series to kind of bring the story that starts back in 1788 up to the present.
Oh, I have a quick question. I like the topic there. I don't know if I say this, if you guys can give us a quick like insight for the show. It's kind of interesting about Australian history. Black Caesar, does that ring a bell? Do you have any little something to say about this guy?
Black Caesar. I believe. Well, first of all, I think he was a convict. And in fact, Black Caesar was one of many convicts in my novel, Master of My Fate. I talk about 18 black convicts that were slaves originally from Jamaica that got transported in 1836. And that was 18 of over 800 men of color that I discovered when I worked at Hyde Park Barracks. So Black Caesar, I think, was one of the first convicts that came. But there was also Billy Blue, who came even before that. And I think Blue's Point is actually named after him. But I don't remember all the history of Black Caesar.
I think that my memory, and anyone can do a Wikipedia and no doubt find out if I'm wrong, but my memory is that Black Caesar and Billy Blue were from African American backgrounds, and their experience is a testament to the fact that people are moving all over the place during that period of the European empires in the 18th and 19th century. So people are ending up, you know, they're from the Caribbean, but they're ending up in Australia via the UK, sometimes via the United States, which itself was going through a revolutionary period. So bodies are kind of being churned up by history at this time. And Black Caesar, I think, is quite a controversial figure because on the one hand, he did forge links with Pemulwuy and Aboriginal communities, but I think he was also involved in the conflicts between the colonizers and indigenous people on both sides. Mm-hmm. And there are some fantastic researchers like Cassandra Pybus who know that history in depth, and I would definitely recommend people go and read the specialist on this one because there's a lot to it. Mm.
So it's so interesting that just when I have a quick discussion similar to what you guys might find at the symposium, it's so interesting because what you said is also a story that's been said, like, oh, these are Jamaicans. I have a Haitian friend. There's this guy from Haiti who came in the, you know, his name is this. And then this lady, Cassandra Pybus, says they're African-American because she can trace it back through this book of free Negroes from Virginia or something like that. So it's kind of interesting because there is doubt, but there's also factual stuff. Alternative facts, or are they actual facts? You know what I'm saying? So I'm just it's kind of curious. Were there West Indians on the first fleet? Undoubtedly, right? Undoubtedly. What are their names? Who are they? Can you guys speak to that? Or is it like...
I think John Aiken was the name of a, we believe, a West Indian. And just to deal with that in terms of factual, yes, there are factual research that certainly I did, that I was able to see a convict indent. I then was able to trace their backgrounds all the way back to Jamaican research. So I was able to see where they actually came from. And in fact, one of the people that we have on our podcast, I don't know, are we supposed to tell about Nellie? Yeah. Okay. So in fact, one of the people that we're looking at in terms of her podcast, Nellie Small, who there again was a really, really famous artist, black artist. She was actually, I believe, dressed as a man and so well known at the top of her tree, has been forgotten, except now she's being brought back. We've gone back and looked at the research and we've taken her all the way back to 1853, was when her great-great-great-grandfather arrived in Australia. So while I hear you, yeah, it gets a bit muddled, but also we have to remember that people that kept those facts were just like you and me. They were just clerks, you know, and half the time they were underpaid, they were tired, having worked all day. Often names went missing, you know, when I've looked at the records, you can find, so where people came from as well. A lot of times they didn't even know where those places were. And I've just looked up John Caesar. He's actually from Madagascar, is what it's saying in my Wikipedia. Now, I haven't looked at that record, but we're going to have to take it that way. And that was the thing, to get back to Nellie. She always said that she was West Indian.
Right.
And so now we have actually traced it. 3 generations of West Indian in her background.
Excellent. Well, there you go. Let's give people a snapshot of the event, the place, the time, the date.
So just quickly, where and when. This is Friday, May 3 at the Parramatta City campus of Western Sydney University. It's the Peter Shergold building, which is a 1-2-minute walk from the train station. It's right there on Parramatta Square. We're going to get started at bright and early at 9 a.m. with Maxine Beneba Clark, our keynote speaker, on at 9:30. And we're going to run all the way through the day. So we've got a fantastic lunch being put on by Jamaican Delight, who do Jamaican catering all over the city, with beverages provided by Jamaica Products. And we'll break for informal drinks at the end of the day at 6 p.m. So it's going to be a long, rich, diverse day out at Parramatta campus of Western Sydney University.
Callaloo and Wattleseed, a one-day symposium on Caribbean culture in Australia, is going to be held at Western Sydney University, Parramatta City Campus, on May the 3rd, at starting at 9 o'clock. And it's going to be a full day. In between the panels, there'll be tea and coffee, chance to chat to your neighbour. And then we'll have actually four panels during the day: writing, performance, music, and education. And at the end of the day, hopefully people will want to engage. We've left a whole hour for people to actually talk about their own experiences.
So you guys are not just academically inclined and artistically inclined. You guys have an other side. You know what I mean? You guys have favorite foods. You guys have favorite music. You guys have favorite whatever. So the first thing I would ask, Sian, let me ask you first, what's your favorite Caribbean food?
Sorry. There's no doubt. I've probably overlapped with you there. Sorry. That's my podcast thing going on. My favorite breakfast is saltfish and ackee and boiled green bananas and callaloo and maybe some pawpaw on the side and a bit of orange juice and Blue Mountain coffee.
Okay. Expensive taste. All right. Ben?
Only expensive in Australia.
That's where we are. Yes. We're in the land of the wattle seed.
Yes.
I also love callaloo, but I'm going to say if I had one meal that I could eat from the Caribbean, just one, it would be curry goat. I love the goat falling off the bone.
Caribbean music genre. Ben, I know you from through a friend of mine called Matt. So I'm going to hit you up first. What is your favorite Caribbean music genre?
As you will not be surprised that I love dancehall, top of the tree. I love all Caribbean musical genres, but dancehall is the thing that really got me into Caribbean culture in a big way. Particularly in the United Kingdom, where I went a lot. I was living there for a few years, and with your friend Matt Baker and our mutual friend, went to a lot of dancehall evenings. But it was really going to dancehall in the streets of Kingston that made me love that.
What song do you remember from that time when it first hit you in your chest? Boom.
It literally hits you in the chest because the size of those speakers at the dance hall parties is so massive. So I arrived in Jamaica and I had a couple of contacts and I said, hey, I really want to go out to a dance hall night. And they said, sure, we'll pick you up from your hotel at 2 a.m. I was like, what? Where am I going? Where are you taking me? I didn't know these people. Never met them before. But I was like, I can't pass up the opportunity. It was a Tuesday night, 2 a.m., Kingston, Jamaica. And they took me to a night called Bozy Tuesday. And as I was walking up to this, basically a car park of an industrial site where they'd set up these speakers 3-4 meters high, banks of speakers, I heard these kind of bells chiming, ding 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 ding, and then the bass comes through and it's like, and it was the overtime rhythm, which was a huge rhythm in the summer of 2012, and I think it might have been Egyptians overtime, which was the biggest on that particular rhythm. And I think I'd heard it a bit before, but I'd never heard that, like the bass hit me. So it's not the best rhythm of all time. It's not my favorite, but I have the fondest memories every time I hear those bells go off from the overtime rhythm.
Sienna, come in.
Amazing, amazing, amazing. But you know, it's a bass, and you have to be on the ground in that island and you hear the bass and it's just beating you in the heart, like the drums. Well, I'm going to stick to theme. I'm going to go with Mr. Bob Marley. Of course, I have to, don't I? And I'm going to go with reggae. And I'm going to go with 400 Years.
Excellent.
Yeah.
All right, when you listen to those smooth beats, those reggae beats, those dancehall beats, you need a beverage, right? Sienna, what's your favorite beverage?
Well, it has to be a top-up. It has to be a toss-up between my fabulous Red Stripe beer or what I really love is rum and ginger.
Okay. Is there any ratio that you recommend the listeners?
Well, actually, it's really rum punch, but it has to be made the Jamaican way, not with like a lot of syrup and stuff. It has to be like, it's the rum. It needs to hit you. It needs to glide down your throat to warm you up.
Okay.
Yeah, I've got a similar one, a rum mixer, but my favorite rum mixer is Ray and Ting.
Ray and Ting.
So Ting is a kind of grapefruit, soft drink that you get in Jamaica. It's surprisingly tasty. And Ray is a overproof white rum, so 70% levels. And you have Ray and Ting, and it sends you into a different world. It's a different kind of intoxication, and I love it.
Excellent. All right, so let's go back to Siena. I'm going to ask you, this is the last question. Give me a book title that you recommend people read.
Well, I'm going to have to do a plug. I'm going to have to put my own book, Master of My Fate by Sienna Brown. Absolutely.
Where does one find those books?
You can find it online. You can find it in Dimmicks. You can find it on any good bookstore. But I think you can also get a Kindle version, which is a little bit cheaper. And it means you can just go online and get it right away.
Ben?
Second that, but my recommendation is to read Hungry Ghost by Kevin Jared Hussain. He's an Indo-Trinidadian writer, and we've been talking a lot about the sort of Afro-Caribbean, but just as big in places like Guyana and Trinidad is the influx of people through the indentured system of labor in the 19th century. And so this Trinidadian novel is about the kind of people who are still living in the old barracks on the plantations after the indenture system ended. So it ended in the beginning of the 20th century, and it's set in the 1940s. And Kevin Jarrett Hussain just has the most beautiful prose of any writer currently working in the world. So if you haven't heard it, Hungry Ghost, it's a brilliant book.
All right. So, hi, I'm Sienna Brown. I'm Jamaican born. I grew up in Toronto, and I've lived in Australia for about 30 years. I'm a novelist. My first novel, Master of My Fate, won a couple of awards, and that was actually about Jamaican men who were slaves who were brought here as convicts in 1836. I also have a television background, and I used to be a professional dancer. So I've got arts running all the way through me.
How do people follow you? Where can they follow you?
Okay, well, they can buy my book. No, but seriously, they can find me at www.siennabrown.com.au, and I'm on Instagram, and I'm also on LinkedIn.
I'm Ben Etherington. I'm a researcher and an academic and a teacher at Western Sydney University in the Writing and Society Research Centre. If you want to follow me, you're just going to have to get in touch with me the old-fashioned way by email. I don't do any form of social media. It's not my bag. But my email is b.etherington@westernsydney.edu.au, or just look up the Writing and Society Research Centre. They're hosting the event Callaloo and Wattle Seed. My profile's up there, and you can see the kind of things I've been up to. But my whole focus in my academic life has been, how can I support and research decolonization? So I'm currently writing a history of Creole poetry in the Caribbean from the period of slavery up to the period when the Caribbean gained its independence through the 1940s to the 1960s. So really, it's about how does language itself and the use of language, the creative use of language, be decolonized. So that's kind of the background to my interest and how I met Sienna, because Sienna's book, Master of My Fate, is probably the first Australian book written in a Creole language. It's first person, and William Buchanan, through Sienna's prose, speaks in Jamaican patois, in a version that Sienna kind of created, a sort of neo-historic Jamaican voice.
Excellent. That was it, guys. I appreciate you for being here one more time. So, yeah, I will see you at the symposium.
We hope so. We're counting on you being there, Fez.
Okay. See you there.